It's Marketplace Tech for Thursday the 23rd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. If you've often felt a sneaking sense of impending doom, you are not alone. There are whole wings of academic institutions dedicated to various forms of existential risk. Annalee Newitz is the founding editor of the science website io9.com. She says Earth is overdue for a mass extinction event. Her new book is titled Scatter, Adapt, and Remember. It's a collection of stories about how humans can use technology and more to be part of the future. Annalee Newitz, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So your book, you've told me your book has a happy ending, but let's talk about the scary part first. We are eventually here heading towards some sort of extinction event if we look at the statistics, right?
That's right. The Earth has already gone through 5 mass extinction events, and that's actually a scientific term of art for any event where more than 75% of all species die out. And it usually takes about 1 million years for that to happen, but that's actually quite fast in geological time.
You point out that our carbon output right now is basically untenable, something that is nearly total consensus, right, in the scientific community. But you have kind of an unnatural fix towards this. You want to make the world more suitable for humanity. How?
Yeah. Well, because of the fact that I'm concerned about mass extinctions, and most of them have been caused by climate change, we really need to be thinking about, you know, immediate ways that we can reduce carbon output. As we look further into the future, I'm really interested in the prospect of technologies that would allow us to do geoengineering, which is basically treating the climate the way we currently treat the land, basically becoming farmers of the climate and taking control of the patterns that cause climate change, like the carbon cycle, which just has to do with how much carbon is in the atmosphere, which can raise the temperature. And so it's very possible that technologies that people are working on right now to scrub carbon out of the atmosphere might one day be just a permanent fixture in our lives. And this is the other part that's really interesting. The planet isn't usually as cool as it is now. For most of the planet's life, there have been no ice caps. It's been a pretty warm, tropical world. And it's not a great world for humans because we're adapted to this cooler world. So if we really want to live long-term on the planet, we're going to need to have technologies that maintain this kind of unnaturally cold climate.
So beyond, personal fans, what are the technologies that are going to help us do that?
There are a lot of different ideas. One of them that I think is quite interesting is called artificial weathering. That process of just wearing down the land and having rivers come down mountains and flow into the oceans eventually, that's actually a carbon sink. There's a chemical process that happens where that activity pulls carbon out of the atmosphere slowly over hundreds of thousands of years. What if we ground up a whole lot of rocks into powder, specific kinds of rocks that tend to draw down carbon, and just laid those rocks out into vast areas to pull down carbon from the air, and then we wash those rocks out into the ocean. Once that powdery substance has locked that carbon up, it sinks to the bottom of the ocean. And pretty much all of these ideas, those are all about trying to pull carbon down into the very, very deep ocean, because the carbon cycle naturally wants to put carbon there where it's sequestered away from the atmosphere. So our whole goal is to create some kind of technology that can actually once again sequester carbon.
You also talk a lot about cities because, like it or not, cities are a huge part of our future. And we're going to need to get very serious about designing them in a way that helps, you know, protect us from all sorts of things. You talk about pandemics and you know, protecting people from large-scale disease outbreaks. You also talk about protecting cities from natural disasters. Tell me about the Apocalypse Lab at UC Berkeley. They're simulating earthquakes there, but with these buildings that are sort of like a mix of physical models and software models?
What they have there is an enormous warehouse full of giant machines that are designed to do things like crush large pieces of concrete. The way that they test to see if a new structure or a new design for a building will withstand an earthquake is that they actually build part of the physical structure in real life, and then they have a computer simulation of the rest of the structure that actually responds to the physical shaking of that first part of the structure and propagates whatever the damage is and whatever the earthquake is up through this simulated part of the structure. And so they're actually able to model how an earthquake would affect a very large building by using partially real parts of a building and partially computer-generated parts of the building. And this has been shown to work quite well. It really does sort of shake out in reality to match how an actual building would behave.
One of your main points near the end of your book is that for survival, we're going to need to make the move to space and get serious about that. So what the heck is a space elevator? How is it going to work? And what button do I press when I get in it?
Basically, it's an elevator. You have an elevator platform attached to the Earth at the equator. And then you have a really, really long tether, 60,000 miles into space. So you're partway to the moon by the time you reach the end of that tether. And on the other end of the tether is a counterweight. And that counterweight could be anything from a captured asteroid to some kind of friendly version of the Death Star. And it would basically be a port where you would end up and hang out for a day or two while you're waiting for your spaceship to take you somewhere else. That counterweight would be in geostationary orbit around the planet. We actually have the technology for the elevator car, which would basically be kind of like a sleeper car on a train. And that would be pulled up the tether using robotic arms. It would literally be a robot climbing hand over hand, pulling this sleeper car out of the atmosphere and up into space. So the question is, how do we make this strong tether?
Uh-huh.
And that's something that scientists are working on right now. It may be made of carbon nanotubes. It may be made of a substance we don't know yet. This is something that people are actively thinking about building.
And you talk a little bit as well about synthetic biology and actually changing our bodies so that we're able to live in space, because space has a lot of radiation and things like that, right? So how do we get our bodies to the place that we can survive out in space, and what makes our bodies an optional part of our existence in the future?
How do we live in space? One possibility is we might re-engineer our DNA to be more radiation resistant. And there's actually scientists right now who are trying to figure out if there is a range of resistance to radiation in our DNA. If we can find out, oh, there's a particular sequence of DNA that makes us better able to repair that damage quickly, we might be onto a gene therapy that people could have that would help them live in space without developing cancer, for example. The other thing is, maybe we, in the far future, won't even use our bodies to go into space. Maybe we'll outfit our bodies like cyborgs and we'll be part technology and part biology, like RoboCop. Our brains could be, you know, ported onto a computer. Again, this is very far future, but it's actually, if you're thinking about, you know, how is the human race going to survive in space in 1,000 years? It's really not that far-fetched. We're going to have to figure out something to do to protect our very, very fragile bodies. And it may be something quite unexpected, something that you never would imagine and that you never see on Star Trek.
Why does your book have a happy ending, and what is the happy ending?
So I actually think that humans do have a long time ahead of us. My optimism is kind of a pragmatic optimism. I'm not saying we're going to survive in a way that's awesome necessarily. There may be really, really tough times ahead, but I think that we will make it through. Some subset of humanity will make it through. There may be horrific disasters. But I do think that in the end, when we do survive, that we are going to figure out ways of coping with these kinds of massive disasters. And those ways are going to involve building better cities, building space-going civilizations so that our planet isn't our only home base. I think the main thing is to be looking at it as a long-haul kind of problem. And I think a lot of people are not used to thinking of it that way. We want there to be just this tidy ending where we all go extinct, but I think it's going to be a lot more complicated than that.
Well, is there any piece of technology or gene therapy that you've looked at as part of your book that will actually make humans into creatures that think far enough in advance for that sort of thing?
Actually, there are futurists who believe that we may, at some point even soon, be taking drugs that make us more empathetic. Uh-huh. And make us more altruistic. I mean, we're already a pretty altruistic group. I think we always forget that. And there's actually a group of futurists at Oxford University who've written a little bit about the idea of drugs that would sort of change our emotional makeup and change the way that we view other people and
change our perspective.
Yeah, help us see strangers as allies, help us see enemies as potential friends. And, you know, maybe we could actually take some kind of Prozac for ethics, you know, help people not go right to conflict when they disagree with someone, maybe help them negotiate instead of fight. And that's actually a very real possibility. In fact, we have a lot of mood altering drugs now that never would have seemed possible just even half a century ago. Maybe that'll happen, or maybe we will just develop technologies that allow us to build better environments that help people have a more altruistic view simply because they've had better experiences growing up.
Anna Lee Newitz is the author of Scatter, Adapt, and Remember: How Humans Will Survive a Mass Extinction. Anna Lee, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.